Jy luister na RSG Geldsaake met Moneyweb Potgoede met gasheer Ryk van die Kerk.
Lede van die GEPF kan hulle ore spits en gerus 'n knoop in hulle oor maak om Portfolium te kontak. Die grootste aftreefondse in Suid-Afrika vertrou hulle lede se aftreebeplanning toe aan Portfolium en jy kan ook deur 'n SMS met die woord RAND na 37522 teen R1 of 'n e-pos aan info@portfolium.co.za te stuur. Portfolium is 'n geregistreerde FDV, B's en V's online beskikbaar. Letsetja Kanyahu is the governor of the Reserve Bank and he joins me in studio now. He has been governor since 2014 and you are currently serving your third 5-year term. I think it will come to an end in 2029 and that's a long stretch. You've been a pillar of strength and provided stability in one of our most important institutions. Let's talk about this year. It has been an incredible year. The global environment has become unpredictable. We've seen a rise in protectionism. We've seen volatile capital flows and changing trade alliances. It couldn't have been easy to steer monetary policy in South Africa under these conditions, but yet you managed to convince the National Treasury to change the inflation target. What are your views of the main developments of this year and the impact on South Africa?
This was a year of uncertainties. You saw elevated economic uncertainty. Economists were all trying to figure out which way the global economy is going, and the uncertainty was just elevated. Second, it didn't help that the politicians added to trade uncertainty. There were things that in the international trading system that we had taken as granted, and certainly we do not know. Today there are tariffs, tomorrow there aren't tariffs, then you have done something that has got nothing to do with trade, and then you have got additional tariffs imposed on you, so there was elevated trade uncertainty. And thirdly, there was elevated geopolitical uncertainty. And all that makes forming a view about the outlook for the economy challenging. And so what you have seen is that many central banks had moved to adopting scenarios as part of their monetary policy decision-making process. In the past, many central banks would just say that this is the outlook for growth, this is the outlook for inflation, and then say whether the risks are assessed to be on the upside or on the downside or whether they are balanced and leave it there. And starting in January this year, we also started to use scenarios. And one of the scenarios that we presented in January was a scenario where AGOA would not be renewed and South Africa would face a 25% tariff on its exports. And
that's what happened.
Well, slightly more. Yep. We ended up with 30%. And whilst we are at it and said that, okay, we have got a 30% tariffs, August arrives and says, okay, you have got a 30% tariffs, but we will exempt the following minerals because they could only get them from here. So you had that. And then you said, okay, this is going to impact adversely on our agricultural sector, in particular the citrus and all of this thing. And then, jiggy jiggy, 2 weeks ago, okay, we will exempt particular food from coming.
Agriculture products.
Yeah. So it has been a big challenge. Even with all of these uncertainties, I actually think that South Africa came much better than that we thought we would come at the beginning of the year. And sentiment about South Africa had changed. And you don't change sentiment by spinning your way out of your problems. You change sentiment by demonstrating that you are taking concrete steps to deal with your problems. And I would sum it up for you in three things. To say to you that getting into the year, there was still uncertainty about what's going to be happening with inflation. There had been elevated noise about central banks and their role, something that we had always taken for granted, that we thought that this was a developing country phenomenon, and you saw it happening in the advanced economies with noise around central banks. And it is in countries where central banks had been left to execute their mandate that the countries came fared well. with respect to inflation. And I would count South Africa in that respect, that the fact that we were left to execute our mandate, that we were able to deliver low inflation. And during the process, we saw an opportunity to actually lower the inflation target. We have been working on this thing since 2021 with the Treasury. And the debate was, what would it take to take inflation from 4.5% to 3%? And then bang, inflation is at 3%. It's a no-brainer. Let's lock the gains now, what you would call the opportunity disinflation. That was the first thing. Second thing that was a concrete action that changed sentiment had to do with the National Treasury's fiscal consolidation path. When they came out and they signaled that we would be able for 3 years in a row to report a primary budget surplus, it was a very important signaling, because it then said we are now going to arrest the debt and bring the debt down. And that becomes important because South Africa now spend more on debt service costs than we spend on education, than we spend on health. So it was very important that we arrest that. And that fiscal consolidation path actually complemented the lowering of the inflation target. The two policies thus reinforced each other, and they had turned sentiment. And in October, when I was in Washington, I met over 150 investors. And the thing was, will this good news continue? And he says that, I said to them, buy while stocks last, because we are on this trajectory and that's where we're going. And then the third and last one had to do with the structural reform agenda, that I actually think that we are beginning to see the results. It's early. The results from structural reform take time, but we are seeing the effects that we have put load shedding behind us. The backlog at the ports had been cleared. We must sort out rail and so forth so that we can move our bulk commodities. So that is, for me, that
the
was
grilliest,
there.
Yeah.
We ended on a high note. All of those things didn't go unnoticed. We got off the grey listing, got a credit rating upgrade. We are experiencing massive inflows of capital into the economy. That has brought down the cost of government borrowing. Also, by extension, lowered the cost of borrowing in this economy.
Yes, it's great to see some tangible good news for a change. And it seems as if South Africa has turned a corner. But at the last MPC meeting, you raised some concerns about potential risks that could have a significant impact on South Africa. And one of them was a potential market shock due to overvalued US equities, especially artificial intelligence companies. Of course, you always need to identify risks, but how significant do you regard this one?
You know, sometimes as central bank, we flag risks and we still hope that the risks do not materialize, right? Because if we knew that they would materialize, we would just do something to just shield ourselves. So what you have is that many analysts are questioning whether these price earnings ratios can be justified, questioning whether this investment that's taken place in the infrastructure on artificial intelligence would yield what is expected. I'd seen that the IMF itself also flagged it in its global financial stability report. And yesterday we launched our financial stability review. Again, we pointed out the things. When you looked at the price earnings ratios, as elevated as they were at the time of the dot-com bubble, then the question is, are there similarities here? What could happen? So you have that problem that we are actually seeing.
What do you believe is the fair value of the exchange rate of the rand?
My views on the exchange rates do not matter. And I used to have two bosses who used to worry about the exchange rate every day. And one of the things that we did was that we conspired as officials and cancelled their subscriptions, because they used to carry these gadgets where they were checking the movement of the currency all the time. And say to you that at every monetary policy committee meeting, we do express a view about whether the rand has deviated from its long-term trend or not. We call that the exchange rate gap. And then we will either say that it is depreciated more or less. We do not attach a figure. And that's because the movements in currencies are driven by so many other factors beyond just the fundamentals, just change of sentiment on the thing could lead to that. Was suffice to say that at the moment, when you looked at fundamentally what had been driving the rent, it had been increased terms of trade. It had been the inflows that we had experienced. We have narrowed our inflation differential with the advanced economies because roughly the currency, as long as your inflation is higher than that of your trading partners, you will expect that your currency will depreciate by the differential. The advanced economies are targeting 2%. We are targeting 3%. The differential is now so much narrower than it used to be. And that is just the differential of the target. If you look at the differential of the actual inflation, actually our inflation rate is less than that of the UK at the moment. And when you look at the US, they are at 2.8 or so. We are at 3.6. The differential is less than one. That explains why the currency ended up appreciating.
That's a theoretical. I think the currency or the exchange rate is moved a lot more by international developments. What's happening through social when Trump sends out policy statements on social media. And that must be difficult to manage. Difficult. The only tool in your toolbox is the interest rate.
Yes, that's the only tool that we have. But we use that tool to deal with inflation, not to deal with the exchange rate. It's a school race. Central bankers need a lesson in modesty. The exchange rate is not one of the things we control. Okay, so to the extent that the movements in the currency are inflationary or disinflationary, that is what we would watch. There isn't much that we can do with the currency. And the work that we had actually done showed that by lowering the inflation target, it would lead to an appreciation of the currency. It would lead to a decline in borrowing costs in the economy. That would save government massive amounts. And you have seen that on budget day, the National Treasury announced that they are cutting their weekly borrowing by about 700 million. And that was just a feeding through that the movement then of the currency was, as you had said, not just about domestic factors. It was also about international factors. The part of it had been people starting to question, because when you have this amount of uncertainty, people would run to the safety of the dollar and say that that is the safe asset. And now people are saying, we are looking for alternative safe assets. And where do they seem to be finding comfort in? Gold. And you saw the movement in the price of gold, because then people were looking for something. You can't decouple completely from the U.S. It is the biggest capital market on earth. By some measure, the U.S. equity market accounts for 60% of the global value of the equity markets. So you would have had those movements, but people were just looking for things. And we just happened to be an attractive option too, because we had things going for us. Those domestic factors were going for us. But to answer you is that for South Africa, what we had experienced with the flows and thus the exchange rate, there were pull factors as a result of what we have done here, but there were also push factors as a result of international developments.
Yeah, and I think a lot of capital has flowed to South Africa, and that has also made a big difference. I want to come back to inflation and the new inflation target. There has been some criticism that administrative prices are much higher than the target. You know, we see significant increases in electricity prices, municipal levies, the price of water and other government services. Is it feasible to set the target at 3% when these administrative prices rise so much faster than 3%, which is not affected at all when interest rates are kept high to keep inflation under control?
I mean, it's a valid point to make. What I had found problematic, though, was a view that said because administered prices are rising so fast, you can't lower the target. It says, no, you are missing the point. We should actually be lowering the target and engaging with the administered price setters to say the target is 3%. How do you justify prices going up by 10%, 20%? How would you justify it? They will find that it is difficult for them to justify that. Importantly, is that we could turn this around and say, honestly, many of these administered prices are services that for all intents and purposes are provided or should be provided by government, and that these prices are actually a tax on South Africans and therefore should actually be coming down. I had found that the useful thing to do is to actually have an engagement program with the administered price setters and say that this is where we are going. And it's been difficult to just make the point until we had to come with a different nuance. Many of the administered price setters are actually big borrowers in this economy, whether it's Eskom or it's Transnet. They are big borrowers in this economy. And we had to change the narrative and say to them, elevated inflation means your cost of borrowing is going up. We are going to have to bring down inflation, because if we bring down inflation, we bring down the cost of borrowing, including your cost of borrowing. So can you be part of the journey to reduce your cost of borrowing instead of playing the game you are playing with the South Africans? And that seems to be resonating.
One of the most critical tasks of the MPC is to set the interest rate, because this rate affects everyone in the country. You know, whether you have debt or receive interest or have a business. And there has
been... And savers.
Exactly, yeah, savers. And there has been criticism that the MPC is maybe too conservative. How much subjectivity is in that decision, or is there a model to guide you?
Conservative is not how I would describe the MPC. The term I would prefer is prudent. We don't get into that committee and says, how can we make life difficult for South Africans? We would like to make life easy for South Africans. And for us, is focusing on getting our inflation to be low and stable. It might be useful for me to walk you through how we eventually arrive at the decision so that you could have a sense. So the next MPC, which is in January, is actually beginning in a week or two, in 2 weeks' time, it begins. It begins with us agreeing on what assumptions we are going to use for our forecast. And we would sit, the staff of the bank would come to us, and then we would deliberate and we would agree on those assumptions. Those assumptions are then used to forecast where growth is going, where the exchange rate is going, where the inflation rate is going, and so forth. And then we get into the first day of the MPC in January, which will normally be on a Tuesday. And on that Tuesday, we will have a presentation on the global economy. Where is the global economy? Where is it going? And once we have done the global economy, we will then come and say, what is the state of global financial markets, and how does that global economic developments and the global financial markets, how do they feed themselves through into the domestic market? What impact are they having in our domestic financial markets? We then look at the domestic economic outlook. We know what is happening with the global economy. We know what's happening with the global financial markets. We have seen what is happening with local financial markets. How is it changing the outlook of the economy from where we had been? And then in the afternoon, we says, okay, that is what has been happening so far. Can we now form a view of the future? So now we consider the forecast, and we will start debating the forecast. And when we're debating the forecast, so the morning of the Tuesday, there are over 120 participants in that meeting. Just over 120 participants.
All from the bank? Or?
Yes, all of them from the bank. On the Tuesday afternoon, the number shrinks to about 20. And we are forming a view about the forecast and what is the outlook looking like. And once that is done, on the Wednesday morning, the six members of the MPC will now meet. Every member has to now say, we have heard everything. What is your view about the economy and where it is going? And based on your view, what should we do with the policy rate? We go around the table. I'm the last one to speak. And then We would say, okay, where is the central tendency here? Where is the decision gravitating towards? And if there are differing views, we will take further round of talks now. Now we are debating to try and convince each other to find a consensus. It's my job to forge that consensus. And sometimes I just look at it and I say that it's okay to go out there and say that we had a disagreement. It's fine. We can go out there and say we had a disagreement so that everybody knows that actually we debate these things. We do not just suffer from groupthink that this is the line, everybody thinks that way. And on that basis, we will then adjust policy. And the last component in there that you must do is that our forecast also has got a policy path, which will say that our model suggests that the policy must be adjusted either upwards or downwards in this quarter, that quarter, and that quarter. And then we have to make judgment. Do we agree with the model or do we disagree with the model?
So it's an informed subjectivity flows through.
Objectivity, I would say, rather than subjectivity.
Maybe it is just semantics. I want to talk about foreign reserves. I see that the foreign reserves, the stats I saw this morning, went up by close to 10% this year. It's over $70 billion. And I would imagine most of that would have come from the spike in the price of gold.
Yes.
Has the Reserve Bank added maybe gold to the reserves?
No.
And are there any plans maybe to utilize this? Because it's also a positive for South Africa.
Gold constitutes just around 23% of our reserves. And people do not realize that. We are amongst the highest. Other central banks are busy trying to bolster their gold holdings, but they are moving from a very low base. We are at 23%. So we do not have to say that we want to increase the gold. We did accumulate additional reserves. So the big chunk of the rise in reserves was the price of gold. But we did pick up a couple of millions of foreign exchange reserves to add to our stock.
What are those assets? Dollars?
Our strategic asset allocation model is diverse. So dollars constitute a big chunk, but we have got euros, we have got Canadian dollars, we have got Australian dollars, we have got Korean won, we've got Japanese yen, we have got the Chinese RMB.
Have you considered adding crypto assets to reserves?
No, we haven't. That is another bubble that we think is going to burst too.
Now, that's an interesting debate because the U.S. is leaning that way and some other countries as well.
Well, you know, I think that the sooner people just, and I'm glad that you use the term crypto assets because some people were calling them cryptocurrencies. And there are technologies there that are useful. We had found that the technology that is used could be very useful in cross-border payments, for example, and there is scope for us to lower the cost of cross-border payments using the technology. But no, we have not considered adding crypto assets to our reserves.
Just lastly, I want to get a view of you for the future, what you expect may happen. There have been a lot of positives coming through. Do you believe we can get this momentum and that this could translate into higher inclusive economic growth?
Yes, but it's going to take time. And I think that right at the beginning of the conversation, I talked about what I had called the three pillars that would take us there. But the important thing about those three pillars is that they are also helping us to build resilience. Should there be a shock, we should be able to absorb the shock. And one of the things that had been coming through in the deliberations when we were meeting other policymakers in Washington has to do with building the fiscal buffers. Build your defenses whilst the time are good. Build your defenses. And with the Treasury running these successive primary surpluses, it means that should there be a shock, we would be able to absorb it better. With us lowering our inflation target, the stance that we have, if there is a massive shock and inflation surges, we have got a credible anchor through which we would be bringing the things down. And one of the scenarios that we actually put during the recent Monetary Policy Committee meeting, actually, it's two scenarios. One had to do with the strengthening of the dollar. What if the dollar strengthens again across all the currencies? What would it mean? And we ran that scenario. And even with that scenario, we still found that we will still be within the ballpark in terms of our inflation target. Interestingly, in that scenario where the dollar strengthens, economic growth in South Africa accelerates. And the numbers are that, well, you are benefiting from a currency that also depreciates, and it depreciates in real terms because you have got a lower inflation target now, and your inflation target is closer to that of the US and now. So the ability to absorb that such a shock is so much better than before. The other scenario that we ran was when you asked the question about administered prices, and that scenario had to do with what if the administered price setters do not adjust their price settings and thus fit into inflation expectations that South Africans would say that, yes, we have got a lower inflation target, but sure, municipal rates and taxes are going up by this amount, is higher than the inflation rate. My electricity goes up by higher than this. My water bills is going up higher. And
exactly.
My milk, and then say that that might result in a situation where inflation expectations do not come down as much as we thought. Even with that adverse scenario, we still see inflation having a 3% handle, but moving towards the 4, but still there.
One of the structural problems we have impacting growth is investment, infrastructure investment. Now, the government has announced many or significant investments, but the private sector seems to hoard a lot of cash and be reluctant to invest in productive assets. I think gross fixed capital formation is around 15% of GDP. It should be closer to 30%. And it stems from maybe a trust deficit between the private sector and the government. What does your models indicate investment levels would be? Because that will be critical to accelerate growth.
You need the investment to accelerate growth. But there are also times where investment does not take place because we do not see growth, which then means that government should actually be investing. And I think of it in this way. If government has not been investing, why do we blame the private sector if the private sector has not been investing? Government is running the country, and you should expect that if government is confident the country is moving forward, you should see it with government investment. Eventually, government has come to the party with the announcement in the investment program. And if that comes in, then it should start to crouch in private investment. But think of it. If I have to sink a mine and I know I am going to need a railway line from there, and government is not investing in building the railway line, why should I go and invest knowing that I will invest there, but I will not be able to take my commodities there? And therein comes the beauty of South Africa, because it is this partnership between business now and government that would unlock that logjam.
Governor, thank you so much for coming in today, and thank you for your time.
It's only a pleasure.
It's Governor Lesetja Kanyahu. He is the head of our Reserve Bank. Laat Portfolium se kundige finansiële adviseurs jou bystaan om 'n beter uitkoms vir aftrede te verseker. Veral indien jy lid van die GEPF is, wat nou die opsie geniet om vrywillig vroeër af te tree. SMS die woord RAND na 37522 teen R1 en stuur 'n e-pos aan info@portfolium.co.za. Portfolium is 'n geregistreerde FTV BSNV's aanlyn beskikbaar.
Is jy 55 jaar of ouer en 'n lid van die GEPF? Goeie nuus is jy kan nou op 'n vroeë aftrede gaan sonder enige penalisasies en moontlike addisionele vergoeding kry volgens jou diensjare. Vra soos: hoe benut ek my volle belastingvrye voordeel uniek deur die GEPF met aftrede? Wat gebeur met my mediese subsidie as ek sou vroeër aftree? Hoe betaal ek so min as moontlik belasting gedurende my aftrede? En kan ek dit werklik bekostig? Jy het net tyd tot 30 November om hierdie lewensveranderende besluit te neem. Stuur 'n SMS teen R1 met die woord RAND na 37522 of rig 'n e-pos aan info@portfolium.co.za. Niemand verstaan die GEPF beter as Portfolium nie. Laat ons jou bystaan om 'n ingeligte besluit te neem.
Jy het geluister na RSG Geldsaake met Money Web Potgoede elke weeksdag om 7 na middag. Vir meer Money Web Potgoede, besoek moneyweb.co.za of laai die toepassing af en volg Money Web News om dagliks op hoogte te bly.